Thank you everyone for coming on a frigid night and for dealing with the constantly changing schedule of these shiurim. But this is the last part of the three-part series. So we discussed the first time what makes a person in Nida, the second time both on a Daraisa level and on a Darabana level. The second time we discussed during the period of Nida what the restrictions are between husband and wife. And tonight we're going to discuss how to go from being a Nida to no longer being a Nida, the Tara process. And there are essentially five stages of the Tara process. There are the initial 5 days, there's then the Hefsek Tara, then you have the Shiva Nikiyim, then the Chafifa, the preparation for the mikveh, and then the actual Tevila b'mikveh. So we're going to go through each one separately, all five steps in the process. So first you have the initial, what we call the 5 days. It's really a little bit of a misnomer. It's not really 5 days. But what it means is that once a woman becomes a Nida, very much on a Darabanan level, when we add in all the Chumras that we add in, there's a time period of 5 days before she can do a Hefsek Tara and start counting the Shiva Nikiyim. Now, what that 5 days means is if a woman becomes a Nida on, let's say, Sunday afternoon at, I don't know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, so she cannot do the Hefsek Tara Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, but Thursday evening before nightfall, she can do the Hefsek Tara. She has Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then Thursday evening she can do the Hefsek Tara, provided that she's no longer bleeding. Now, where does that come from? Why 5 days? What's the number five? So it's not like some magical number. What it's based on is the following: that there is a halacha called Paleta Shichva Zera. Paleta Shichva Zera means that after having tashmish for 72 hours. There's assumed to be some zera that could still drip out of the body. If that were to happen, even if you don't even realize that it is happening, if that were to happen, one cannot count Shiva Nikiyim as that is happening. So on a Doraisa level, Midoraisa, the only restriction would be that you can't start counting the 7 clean days until 72 hours after the last Bia. So that would be the din on a Doraisa level. However, we added a whole bunch of chumras to that, and you should realize 72 hours would mean that not 3 days, but 4 days, because the 72 hours they start at whenever the last bia was, which is sometime in the middle of the day. Meaning, let's say sunset was 7 o'clock, and the bia happened at 11 o'clock at night. So if you were to count 72 hours from 11 o'clock at night, that would bring you to 11 o'clock at night 3 nights later, which would already mean that day is lost as one of the Shiva Nikiyim, because the 7 clean days have to be complete days. So that would already bring us to 4 days. But we added two important chumras. One chumra that we added was that even if there wasn't a Tashmish Amita, we always pretend as if the moment before a woman gets her period, there was a Tashmish Amita. Even though there wasn't, we always pretend as if it had happened right before the woman gets her period, like the second before she got her period. And we then add an extra day on top of that. So instead of starting the clock at the last time of intimacy, we start the clock at the time that the woman gets her period. That's chumra number one, that we start the clock then. And chumra number two is we add an extra day. Now, chumra number two, these chumras are Ashkenazi chumras, and if there is a major need, we can sometimes be makel on these chumras. But it would have to be a significant need. For example, if there's a fertility issue, and the doctor says that you're missing your ovulation by 1 day, if you can only go to the mikveh 1 day earlier, you wouldn't have as much of a problem. So that would be enough. Usually, that would be enough for one to permit counting the 4 days as opposed to the 5 days. But it should be noted that there are no kulas if a person is still bleeding. It's only that there's only room to be makel if the period is over and you're able to get a hefsek tara, clean hefsek tara earlier, but you're waiting out the 5 days. Most of the time, for most women, they wouldn't be able to get a hefsek tara earlier anyway, so it's not really all that much of a chumra. So that is the basic idea of the 5 days. Like we said, There are circumstances where we could be makel on that fifth day. I wouldn't suggest ever to be makel on your own on that fifth day, that when such circumstances arise, a shaila should be asked to make sure that it is in fact a serious enough shas hachak. Rav Moshe has a tshuva about an unusual case, a fellow whose family, I guess from Brooklyn or wherever, the family went to the bungalow colony during the summertime, and the husband, it's fairly common, the husband would stay in what they call the city during the summer, and the wife and the kids would go to the, he writes, Kuf Aleph Vav Nun Tes Resh Yud, the country, during the summertime. And what happened was that her Lel Tvila was going to turn out to be the night after he goes back, meaning if he's going back Sunday afternoon, Sunday night was going to be her Lel Tvila. And that would mean that they weren't going to see each other again until Friday night. So it's not going to be a one-day difference between keeping 4 days and keeping 5 days. It's going to be a five-day difference between keeping 4 days and keeping 5 days. So in that case, Rav Moshe was willing to be lenient on knocking out the fifth day and say that if she's able to get a Hafsik Tara 1 day earlier, so that they could be together 1 day earlier and not have to wait those extra several days, he was willing to be lenient on a one-time basis. But as I said, each circumstance is different, and each time a shaila needs to be asked if this were to come up. Now, it should be noted, the reason that we added the fifth day was because we're afraid people might get confused if one gets if a woman gets her period during Ben HaShemashos, because Ben HaShemashos is a confusing time. For example, tonight, Shkia was 7:03. So if, let's say, a woman discovers that she got her period at 7:15, so when do you start counting the 5 days? Do you start counting it? Well, today was Wednesday, right? I'm all confused with the Purim. So do you start counting from Wednesday, or do you start counting it from Thursday? So in order that people should have like a safety net, that's why we added the fifth day. That we always just count 5 days. And that way, in case it happens Ben HaShemashos, even if you count from the day earlier, you're still safe because you're still definitely at least counting 4 days. But because of that, because that's the whole logic of the fifth day, if a woman actually gets her period during Ben HaShemashos, you are definitely allowed to count from the earlier day. There are poskim that are machmir about that, but it's very difficult to understand. So the pasha pshat, the simple psak is probably that if a woman gets her period at 7:15 tonight, that she would be able to count already Wednesday as day one. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday evening, she would be permitted to do the hefsek tara in that circumstance. So that brings us to the hefsek tara. Right, the first 5 days is what we would call, I guess, the freezer. Right, you can't do anything. You're not allowed to. You can't do anything to help getting out of the nida status. But then the hafsek tara actually begins the real process. It actually begins the process of getting out of the nida status. The hafsek tara itself consists of three parts. One part of the hafsek tara is an etzah tova. It's good advice. It is not a halacha that is a requirement. A second part of the hafsek tara is an absolute halacha and must be done. And then the third part of the hafsek tara is a chumrah that we certainly recommend, but in circumstances where it's difficult, we'd be makel on. So what are these three parts of the hafsek tara that I'm referring to? So the first part, that is an etzah tova, that's just good advice. The Rama writes, uminag kosherhu. The Rama says it's a proper practice. That it's proper to wash oneself out before the hafsek tara. Unlike any other bedikah throughout the entire 7 days, the hafsek tara serves a completely different function than all the other bedikahs. All the other bedikahs, their function is, their purpose is to make sure and to verify that you haven't seen dam since the last bedikah, that nothing has happened. So it would be cheating to wash out before you do a bedikah on any of the other bedikahs. You can't wash away all the evidence and then say, oh, I guess there was no evidence there. The hafsek tara is not to verify that you haven't seen dam. That's not what the hafsek tara is for. The hafsek tara is to verify that from here on, I am no longer seeing dam. We know that you have seen dam. That's why you're doing the hafsek tara, because there was a period of nidus. But the Hefsek Tara is to say, okay, right now at this very moment, there's no longer dam, and hopefully there won't be for the next 7 days. So that's why it's not only permissible, but even advisable to wash out before the Hefsek Tara. And that way, you can, it's not getting rid of evidence in the sense that you're closing your eyes from the reality. No, you know that there was blood there, but it's irrelevant evidence. You're getting rid of what was there and now turning a new page. Having said that, it's not proper to wash out the second before you do the Hafsik Tara, because then you don't even really know that right now you're not seeing dam, because it could be that it's coming and it's just coming very slowly. So you'd want to wait a few minutes at least after washing out before doing the Hafsik Tara. That is the Eitzah Tova, the good advice. Then there is the actual din, the actual requirement. The actual requirement Shulchan Aruch is very, very strong about is to do a bedika yafe, to do a proper bedika with a bedika cloth, an internal examination, a pre-checked white cloth. The Rambam holds that's a din midaoraisa, that it's absolutely required even on a daoraisa level to do a real hefsek tara. That's what marks the beginning of the shiva nikiyim, of the 7 clean days. Now, very often a woman will do a hefsek tara. Let's take the example, it's just the easiest example to use. A woman gets her period on Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, let's say, or whatever, 10 o'clock in the morning. Doesn't make a difference what time of the day. So Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, nothing you could do. Thursday toward evening, she could do a hefsek tara. So let's say tonight, Shkia 7:03, she does a hefsek tara at 6 o'clock, and she sees that there's a little bit of blood on it. So that's okay. She could try again as long as she tries again before 7:03, because it's only the last one has to be clean. Because as we said, the Hafsek Tara is not to verify that there hasn't been bleeding. We know there has been bleeding. It's to verify that from here on in there won't be, and that the next 7 days are going to be absolutely clean. So at one point before those 7 days start, which would be at Shkia, at one point before Shkia, you need to make sure that there's one clean Hefsek Tara. So if a woman sees a little drop on a 6 o'clock Hefsek Tara, she could try again at 6:30, and if that one's clean, it's fine. If it comes out a total mess at 6 o'clock, so it's unlikely that she probably is going to need another day. It's unlikely that it's going to come out perfectly clean at 6:30. But that's the basic halacha of Hefsek Tara. Hefsek Tara has to be done with a bedika cloth. It should not be done, cannot be done with a tampon or with anything else that will or with things that will fall apart, like tissues or something of that nature, something that you can really do a proper bedika with. That is the absolute requirement. And when should the Hefsek Tara be done? So the Hefsek Tara, ideally, the Shulchan Aruch says, should be done samuch lebein hashmashos. Samuch always means, in halacha, whenever we say samuch, it always means close to, which means a half hour before. So the ideal time, let's say if tonight Shkia was 7:03, the ideal time is sometime between 6:33 and 7:03. However, even if you did it in the morning, it would still work. It would still count. So in the summertime, it's not as big a deal. But often in the wintertime, where Shkia is at like 4:30, and you're busy, and you're working, and the kids get home at 4 or whatever, and there's a lot going on, so it's very hard to get it done within a half hour before Shkia. So it's something to keep in mind that you could do it in the morning, provided that you can get a clean one in the morning. And then if you forget later, it's not the biggest deal, because you could rely on the one that you did in the morning. But ideally, it's supposed to be done before, within a half hour of Shkia, or at least in the second half of the day. The when's the latest time it could be done? So this is always a tricky thing. Often I'll get a phone call. I did the Hefsek Tara. It was 7:06, you know, and it was like a 7:03 Shkia. Sort of Moshe had a well-known kula that he held, that his Talmidim talk about, that Rav Moshe held that you have 9 minutes after Shkia. Different Talmidim say different things about how into that kula Rav Moshe was. It's known that B'Shas Chag he would rely on it, But Rav Stein Zichron Levracha, who is the posik in Shar Yashuv, said that he heard from Rav David that Rav Moshe never meant it lechatchila, certainly, and never even really meant it lahalacha, only for a major, major shas adchak. Rav David has told others only for a major shas adchak. Other Talmidim Rav Moshe say that no, he would say kiseder 9 minutes. You know, they always have 9 minutes. It's vada yom until 9 minutes after shkia. Be that as it may, if you're looking for the 9 minute kula, please do not call me. Rabbi Willig is very, very strict on exactly shkia. I said to Rabbi Willig, so how many minutes? And like 2 minutes after shkia. He's like, no, shkia is the absolute drop dead deadline. There is not a second after shkia. And it was one of the rare times he told me, you must paskin this way. Sometimes from time to time I'll get a call from someone who I don't know, because I don't know, they got my number from somewhere or something, or an email. Usually it's an email or a text, because they found out there's a rabbi that texts, so they'll send me a text, and if it's someone who I don't have any connection with, I'll tell them, you know, you don't really have to ask me this question, you know, send them to someone who's a Talmud or a Moshe or something, and see, maybe they'll have better luck. But if it's someone who typically asks me their questions, so then I'll give the psak that shkia is a drop dead time. Now, what has happened a couple of times is a woman would say, I miss shkia by 8 minutes. And the follow-up question is then, tell me exactly what time the Hefsiktara happened. Because it happened twice already to me that the person asking the question was often when Shkia was. That she said she missed Shkia by 8 minutes, she actually made it by 10 minutes. Because what she was looking at was Zman Hadlakas Neros of Shabbos, which is 18 minutes before Shkia. So that's another advantage of the 18, aside from the Friday craziness, the 18 minute window gives us that other advantage as well, that sometimes it's confused for Shkia, and if you miss it by 8 minutes, you actually caught it by 10 minutes. So it's important to be clear on what the actual times are. And of course, there are apps for that, so you can see on any given day exactly what time Shkia was. But the Hefsiktara must be done before Shkia. Then there is the Chumrah. What's the chumrah that we add? The chumrah of Shulchan Aruch says, "La'olam yilamid adam lahachmir lichatchila b'toch beiso," that one should always teach in his house, that one should be machmir lichatchila on the day of the Hefsiktara to do what's called a moch dachuk, to take a bedika cloth and stick it inside and leave it there for the entire duration of Bein HaShemashos. So what's the duration of Bein HaShemashos? Shkia is at 7:03, so an hour board over here, it says, that's why I keep looking there, I'm not just like looking out the window. It says Seisa Kochavim is 7:43, so it would mean to leave it in from 7:03 to 7:43, that would be a big chumrah, to leave it in for the full 40 minutes, because probably Tzeisa Kochavim is earlier than that. Probably you could be lenient that Tzeisa Kochavim is about 30 to 35 minutes, but that's the idea, to leave it there. What's the point of that? The idea is to make sure that at the very moment when the seven clean days are starting, which is at some point in between Shkia and Seisa Kochavim, whenever the day changes, we don't know exactly when that moment is, but what we do know is that at that moment there was no bleeding that was happening, because there was something there to catch any blood that would have come out. So that's the idea, to be machmir lechatchila, to have a moch dachuk. Now, if there's any reason not to do it, we don't do it. Meaning, if one is irritated or it's painful, for a kala very often it's painful, or if there's been some staining problems, or there was a gynecological procedure that leads you to believe that something might happen, so we would skip the moch dachuk. But that does not mean that we should just skip it forever. That, oh, once I was told that we don't have to do the moch, so let's never do it. Things change over time, and people's bodies change, and what happens changes. So it's something that should be done, if it can be done, if it's not going to cause too much trouble. For the moch dachuk, it's not the same as a regular bedika. One can use a tampon for a moch dachuk, because you don't need a full bedika b'charon v'stakin for a moch dachuk. You just need to have something in there. And once that's done, so once we have these three steps of the Hefsiktara, the good advice of washing oneself out, the absolute required halacha midah or raisa possibly of doing the actual bedika, and the chumrah of leaving a moch dachuk in, and all that came out clean, now we're ready for the Shiva Nikiyim, for the actual seven clean days. So in our case, where it was Sunday that the woman got her period, so Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Thursday evening at 6:35, she did her Hefsek Taira. She left the Moch Dachukin from 7:03 to 7:43, and therefore Thursday night going into Friday is day one of Shiva Nekiyim, which would mean her Shiva Nekiyim are going to be Friday, Shabbos, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and the following Thursday night she'll go to the mikveh. That's important to always remember. The same night of the week that the Hefsek Taira happens before Shkia, that same night of the week, the next week, is when the Leil Tevila is after Tzeis HaKochavim. That's I know I may be saying what's obvious to people who've been married for a while, but it's not always so obvious. I had one situation where someone called me where for years she was going to the mikveh a night early. That's not good. That was not a pleasant conversation. So just make sure we're absolutely clear about that. That 1 week later, same night of the week, but after Tzeis HaKochavim would be the Leil Tevila, would be the mikveh night. Now, what do the Shiva Nekiyim entail? So first, the Shiva Nekiyim are called the Yemei Libun by Chazal. Why are they called the Yemei Libun? Because the assumption is that one wears white during the Shiva Nekiyim, and that is halach in Shulchan Aruch, that one should have in Shulchan Aruch, we assume, white sheets and white clothing for the Shiva Nekiyim, because anywhere that blood is likely to end up, we would want it to be on a white background so that it could be a proper kesem to be analyzed. Having said that, nowadays, given the nature of modern clothing, it's probably not required to have white sheets during Shiva Nekiyim, because it's uncommon that blood actually ends up in sheets. It almost always ends up on undergarments, and therefore, because I guess in those days they didn't have tight undergarments, so it was much more likely that the blood would end up on the sheet, but nowadays almost never ends up on the sheet, so it's not so critical that there be white sheets for Shiva Nekiyim. But white undergarments is required during Shiva Nekiyim. Now, let's say you're stuck somewhere and you don't have any white, so it doesn't mean that you're not allowed to start the Shiva Nekiyim without it. You're allowed to start the Shiva Nekiyim without it, but you should try to buy. You should try to make sure that you have white if possible. Second halacha about the Shiva Nekiyim is that you're supposed to be conscious that it's happening. There is a halacha that if at any point during the seven clean days you think that it's no longer the seven clean days, that itself can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. That by not being cognizant of it being the seven clean days, that could ruin the Shiva Nekiyim. Why is that? Because the Torah says that a Zava Gedola, what we call all nidas, has a mitzvah of counting the Shiva Nekiyim. So there's a big discussion in Poskim, how exactly in Rishonim, how exactly does that happen? How does one count Shiva Nekiyim? For example, there are other mitzvahs that you have to count. There's a mitzvah that the Beis Din has to count the years to Yovel. We don't have Yovel anymore, but there's a mitzvah that we count the days to the Omer. So how do we do the counting of the days to the Omer? So very differently than we do the counting of the days of Shiva Nekiyim. The counting of the days to the Omer is to actually say a bracha on it, and then say Hayom, whatever day of the Omer it is. So in fact, there was a Shla Kadosh that suggested that one has to do the same thing during Shiva Nekiyim, to actually count verbally the days of Shiva Nekiyim. The Noda Behuda wrote about that Shla Kadosh. He says, the Shla Kadosh was such a tzaddik that he loved mitzvah so much, he used the phrase, Ohev mitzvos lo yispa mitzvos. Sometimes people love mitzvos so much they're not satisfied with the ones God gave us, that they have to add their own mitzvos. So he said the Shlach HaKadosh must have loved. It's a polite way of saying he's wrong. He loved mitzvos so much that he added his own mitzvah. But there's no such requirement to actually count verbally. But at least mentally, one needs to count and one needs to be aware of it. I mention this because what often happens is some point during the Shiva Nekiyim, a shaila comes up. A bedika came out looking iffy. Something, a stain came looking iffy. And at that point, often a person's reaction is, I'm going to have to start again. I'm going to start again tonight. I'll do another Hefsek Taira tonight. It's all over. And then the husband will come home and say, why don't we ask a shaila? Maybe it's not so bad. I know it looks iffy, but we'll ask. And then he asks the shaila, and it turns out it wasn't a problem. So the very fact that you've already given up on the Shiva Nikiyim may have ruined the Shiva Nikiyim already. So even if the stain was not bad. So the proper attitude when you find what seems like a problematic stain is one of cautious optimism. That not to say, oh, it's over, there's no more Shiva Nikiyim. There is Shiva Nikiyim until I'm told that there isn't. You know, it may not be, but it might yes be. And therefore, you don't give up on it mentally, because that would ruin the Shiva Nikiyim itself, or at least potentially could ruin the Shiva Nikiyim itself. One other halacha, and most critically, during the Shiva Nikiyim, we already said that first of all, during the Shiva Nikiyim to wear white, second of all, during the Shiva Nikiyim to be cognizant of it, and third, and most critically, what we most associate the Shiva Nikiyim with is a series of bedikos. So how many bedikos have to be done during Shiva Nikiyim? Now, there are many shitos in Rishonim, and there's a big gap between what is required l'chatchila and what would work b'di'avid, if you really have to minimize the bedikos. I don't know why, but for some reason, many Kala teachers teach the bedi'avid as if it's a l'chatchila. And that's a problem, because when you teach the bedi'avid as if it's a l'chatchila, and then you don't do exactly like the bedi'avid, you then get into a place where you're not going to be able to go to the mikveh, it's going to ruin everything. So let's go through what's required l'chatchila. The Shulchan Aruch says, "Bekol yom mizayin yemei asfira, every day of the Shiva Nikiyim, tzricha lios bodekes lichadchila pa'amayim bekol yom." That lichadchila, two bedikos should be done each day, achas shachris v'achas samach lebein hashmashos, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. V'im lo badka bekol hashiva el pamachas, and if in the entire 7 days you only did one bedika, whether it's day one or day seven or any of the intermediate days, that would count, says the Shulchan Aruch. However, then the Shulchan Aruch says v'yesh omrim that it doesn't count, because you need to at least b'di'avad do the first and the seventh day. So he quotes two opinions. What works b'di'avad? Either b'di'avad any time during the 7 days, or b'di'avad, you need day one and day seven. So which one do we paskin like? Says the Shulchan Aruch, two critical words. V'ein lahakel. We should not be lenient on this issue. So what the Shulchan Aruch comes out telling us is as follows. L'chadchila, twice a day, each day for 7 days. The most b'di'avad is day one and day seven. One on day one and one on day seven. Anything less than that, the Shulchan Aruch has ordered us v'ein lahakel. For some reason, there are Kala teachers that teach, and I guess maybe there are rabbis also that teach, I don't know, but I've just heard it from Kala teachers, that teach that l'chadchila to do day one and day seven. That is incorrect. L'chadchila, one does not do day one and day seven, because then what happens if you miss one on day one, or you miss one on day seven? Now you're in a position where the Shulchan Aruch says, ve'ein l'hakel. Ve'ein l'hakel means you can't go to the mikveh. It means you're going to have to start counting again. It could be a real problem. So I don't think that's wise to do l'chadchila. Now, there is a lot in between that. Rabbi Willig, for example, recommends, even as a l'chadchila, not to do twice a day, but to do once a day. Now, many of Rabbi Willig's Piskei Halacha and Hilchos Nida are well-grounded in Rishonim, but are more based on practical experience and things that have happened that he's seen over the years, and this is one of those things. He has many, many rayas from Rishonim to say not like the Shulchan Aruch and to do only one a day, but the real reason that he suggests doing one a day is because he finds that very often the second bedika on a busy day is what will cause problems. A woman will feel too rushed because shkia's at 4:30 or 5 o'clock, and she's sitting in rush hour traffic, and that ends up scratching herself or causes some sort of irritation, and that can cause a lot of problems. So there is no rishon that holds that if you do one a day every day, that there is that would be a problem in terms of going to the mikveh. It would for sure work. So Rabbi Willig recommends one a day every day. Again, the Shulchan Aruch recommends two a day every day. What I would say is try for two a day every day. If you miss the second one, it's not the end of the world. But try for two a day every day. One should not do less than one each and every day of Shiva Nikiyim, unless there's some sort of issue of that you get a kula for, that you ask a shaila about. In the issue of significant staining problems, where just a person's having a very difficult time becoming tahora, or an issue of some irritation, or some other concern. But certainly, I don't know why, but it's I don't know why Kallel teachers sometimes teach it like that. It's a very bad idea to just rely on day one and day seven. Even when we're mekil, to do fewer bedikos than one a day every day, we would always recommend day one, day seven, and one of the middle days, and one of the days in between. So I don't know where that that idea comes from. So that is the Shiva Nikiyim. Any questions on that? Yeah. Right, so it really starts at Shkia that night.
It doesn't start when you do the Hasar.
Right, right. It's the seven. That's a din in the Shiva Nikiyim, the actual seven clean days. Yeah.
When you said you have to be conscious of like counting the days, does that mean like every day you have to be like, this is day one, this is day two? Because like sometimes I'm just like, okay, this is the first day, and I know the last.
Yeah, no, I don't think you have to. No, you don't have to know what day. It's not like Sfiras Omer. You have to know what day, which day it is, just to realize that you're in the Yemei Libun in those 7 days. I don't even know what day of the week it is half the time. So then we prepare for the tefillah. Then the next thing is the chafifa and the tefillah and taking care of chatzitzos. So the tefillah, like we said, is 1 week after the night of the Hafsik Tara, but the tefillah is going to be later on. Now, strictly speaking, on a daraisa level, a zava gadola is allowed to go to the mikveh during the daytime of the seventh day, but midrabanan we don't allow it, because midrabanan, here's the problem. On a daraisa level, if a woman were to go to the mikveh during the seventh day, before nightfall, and then see dam later that day, it would make her tame limafreya, retroactively, which would mean a big problem. Because imagine if a woman goes to the mikveh at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and is with her husband at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and then sees more dam at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it would turn out that they violated Nisr Kares because it would retroactively ruin her. As opposed to if you wait till nightfall, so even if for some reason you see dam the next morning, it doesn't retroactively do anything. It's only from then on that the tumas nida starts. So we're not makel to go during the seventh day. The Shulchan Aruch says pretty clearly, asura litbal biyom zayin. One is not allowed to go to the mikvah on the seventh day, and the mikvahs are closed during the day anyway, so you don't really have the option. Then the Shulchan Aruch says, and even if you want to wait till the eighth day, let's say there is a snowstorm or an ice storm and the roads are frozen over and it's dangerous to leave your house at night, but the next day the sun is going to come out and it's going to be a beautiful 36 degrees where the roads won't be totally frozen anymore, so maybe you want to go during the eighth day. Shulchan Aruch says, even during the eighth day, eini yachal litbol mishum srach bita. One cannot go because it used to be that the way a young woman, a girl, would learn about going to the mikveh is she would see what her mother did. What the mother talks about going to the mikveh? No, but when the girl gets to high school age or whatever, she discovers that there's something called mikveh, and she's like, ah, that's where my mother was going all the time, you know, without makeup and coming back with her hair wet, and, you know, like, who'd you go to like that, dressed like that? Ah, you know, then like, it all clicks. And if in her mind she's gonna think, she's going to remember back that my mother used to go during the daytime, so she's going to think you can go during the seventh day. That's the logic of the Shulchan Aruch, that we don't want to give the visual to the children that going to the mikveh is something that happens during the day. Which is very interesting, because what if you don't have any little girls that are going to learn anything? So the Shach says, yeah, it's a low plug. We just don't open the mikvahs during the day. It's a low plug. But you could see there's a big difference between the restriction of not going during the seventh day, which is a real legitimate concern on a daraisa level that something could really be problematic, versus the concern of not going on the eighth day, which is like this far-fetched concern that the daughter is going to have this imagery in her mind. So because of that, in a Shas Ad Chak, we're lenient to go on the eighth day, not on the seventh day. Meaning, for example, take a case where it's dangerous to go out at night. Hurricane Sandy or something is going on at night, so you can't go to the mikveh at night. You would go, or let's say in the first Gulf War in Israel, when Saddam Hussein was shooting Scud missiles at Israel every night, so there were Scud missiles raining down at night. Everyone had to be in the bomb shelters, so in the Cheder Atum. So they would, the Rabbanut Paskin, that the mikvahs were open during the day for women to go on the eighth day, but not on the seventh day. Yeah.
Why couldn't you just go on the seventh day and just wait till after she has to be with your husband?
So the
after our case, whatever.
So Rav Moshe allows in a Shas Hadchak to go on the seventh day if she won't see her husband until after Seisach Chavim, but only in a major Shas Hadchak. For example, if Lel Tvila is on Friday night and they don't live within walking distance of a mikveh, and when I say not within walking distance, I don't mean like Nebuch, us in North Woodmere, where it's like a 25-minute walk maybe to go to the mikveh. I mean like, you know, it's 7-8 miles to the closest mikveh or more, and you really can't, it's not shayich to walk to the mikveh. So Rav Moshe was makel in that case that a woman could go Friday afternoon, have the husband go to shul early, so when she comes back from the mikveh, he's already in shul, and they won't see each other till after Tzeisach HaChavim. I had to use that kula once. I had a case of a chasan and kala, her first time going to the mikveh after they were married, after the wedding. They were at a family bar mitzvah in a hotel in New Jersey. I forgot the name of the hotel. I used to go there all the time, actually. But it's like 6 miles from Teaneck or something. That was going to bother me that I can't remember the name. What? No. But it's like 6 miles from Teaneck, and there's like Chabad that's like 2.5 miles away. I remember walking to that Chabad. But anyway, so they had a bar mitzvah at this hotel, and that was for Lel Tvila. It was Friday night at this family bar mitzvah, and they asked what to do. So we called Rabbi Sobolovsky. We had him have the... Actually, I had it twice. I had another situation also. We had this happen. We called Rabbi Sobolovsky. We had him call the mikveh and have them open up early for this woman to go, and just told the husband to go to shul early. The other time where it's happened was when Hurricane Sandy happened. The Oceanside mikveh was destroyed. It's now, thank God, rebuilt from what I understand. But for a while, for a short while, not even a very long while, for a short while, it was not usable. So Rabbi Muscat asked, I think it was Rabbi Sablovsky also, maybe Rabbi Willig, and he also got that psak that all the women from Oceanside who had Lel Tvila on Friday night would go to Woodmere to use the mikveh. They couldn't walk back to Oceanside, so they would use it on Friday afternoon before Shabbos, drive back to Oceanside and just make sure that their husbands weren't home. We had a similar shaila came up in South Florida a little while ago, where there was supposed to be some major hurricane that ended up drifting ashore, I guess sort of like this major snowstorm, you know, it just didn't happen. So they had that shaila what to do, because they also were going to not be able to go out at night. Whether or not to be mikel is not a simple thing, but to go on the eighth day, when going out at night is dangerous, it's easier to find a kula in that case. The other time we allow going during the day is for a kala, obviously, for many reasons, but she's not going to be with any husband because she doesn't have a husband yet, and we want to make that a more pleasant experience than going to the mikveh sometimes is for people who are not a kala. We want it to be like more of a spa-like experience, you know, where it's quiet and she's not waiting on a line. Now, the ideally, tevilos should be done on time, should not be pushed off. The Gemara has a comment that says, tevila bizmana mitzvah, that it's a mitzvah to go at the right time. Now, that's really not exactly fully accurate, lahalacha. We don't really paskin tevila bizmana mitzvah, because we have so many chumras added into our tevila already that it's so much later than the real zman. And if we really did hold tevila b'zman mitzvah, then a woman would go to the mikveh whether the husband were around or not, or whether she were permitted to be with her husband or not, if it were Tisha B'Av or Yom Kippur. So we don't really hold tevila b'zman mitzvah, but the idea of wanting to encourage to go on time, that we certainly do hold on. That we certainly do think is the right thing. So the tefillah should not be pushed off for any small reason. If there's a major reason to push it off, certainly if a woman is ill and has the flu or whatever, so something like that, you know, you don't have to go that night. But if for minor inconveniences, you try to overcome the minor inconveniences and to go at the right time. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch paskins. Shulchan Aruch says, "Im bala bi'ir, if the husband is in town, mitzvah litbol bizmana shalavatel mipiri v'rivya afilu la'achas." that the mitzvah is to go at the right time, not to be mevatel from Pru Revu, and we assume not to be mevatel from mitzvahs ona either, and also it's good for Shalom Bayis to go on time. Now, sometimes I'll get a shayla, a husband's out of town, he's on a business trip, he's not coming back for another 5 days. So the woman wants to know, do I have to go to the mikveh tonight? It's a busy night, he's not here anyway. So then the answer is no, you don't have to go to the mikveh that night. You can go to the mikveh sometime before he comes home, and that would be perfectly fine as well.
Yes, is this
the night before makes sense to go, but I don't think it has to be the night before. Go whenever is most convenient. The sleeping with the undershirt thing sounds a little funny to me. I don't know. I'm not sure. Is that like a thing? Is people have heard that? No? I don't know. Sounds a little funny. There is a Shvus Yaakov that says that that it's some sort of sakana to go to the mikveh and not having tashmish that night. But we're not choshish for these kinds of things, for these heebie-jeebies. That's you go to the mikveh and that's when you become tahora.
Are you ever allowed to push off the essay? Like, if you know that you can't go on a Friday night, instead of someone else
so probably better to push off the hefsek than to push off the tefillah. Yeah. I do think that ideally you should try to go on time and try to do the hefsek on time, try to make sure that everything, but if you know that it's just not going to be feasible, you know that you're going to be in a situation where it's not going to happen, it's going to cause such, and you and your husband are both on the same page about that, then better to push off the hefsek than to push off the tefillah. Now, on the day of the tefillah, there's a whole bunch of things to be aware of. First of all, the Rama writes, one is not supposed to eat in between the bathing before going to the mikveh and actually going to the mikveh, and that's anything. You're not supposed to eat anything in between the bath and the mikveh. But in addition to that, for the entire day of the mikveh, even before the bath, the Rama writes, one should not be involved with sticky things like dough or wax candles or things like that that are likely to stick to your skin. So if you're a preschool teacher, maybe don't take the Play-Doh center that day. Take some other center, the penmanship center. I don't know, whatever they're doing in other places. The Shulchan Aruch also says, that on the entire day of going to the mikveh, one should not eat meat. And the reason is because the unlike other foods, or more so than other foods, we assume that meat gets stuck between the teeth, and getting stuck between the teeth can be a problem of a chatzitza, so we try not to eat meat. All of the poskim in print say that the same restriction applies to chicken. I'm told that Rabbi Neuberger is makel on chicken, but I haven't seen any poskim in print that are makel on chicken. This comes up very often as a problem during the summertime, especially like a Sunday night barbecue in the summertime, where shkia is not till like 8:30, so you're not going to the mikveh till after 9, and you're invited to a family barbecue at 5:30. So like, now what are you supposed to do? Like, you eat the corn on the cob? That's a lot worse than the meat in terms of getting stuck between your teeth. That's difficult. It's challenging. So Rabbi Neuberger is makel to have chicken in that situation. I'm personally not so comfortable with it, because the other place in halacha where we use this concept of basar ben hashinayim, of meat getting stuck between the teeth, is the explanation of why we wait 6 hours between fleishigs and milchigs, and we're machmir to wait between chicken and milk also 6 hours. So I don't know, I'm not so comfortable about that. However, there's a major exception to that rule, to that restriction, and that is if there's a Suda's mitzvah, such as a Shabbos Suda. So if a mikveh, if Leil Tevilah is Motzoi Shabbos, you're allowed to eat meat on Shabbos, even for Shalosh Hodas. There's a little known halacha that women are obligated in Shalosh Hodas. Is a slightly more known, but also a little known halacha, that men are obligated in Shalosh Hodas. Shalosh Hodas is not just a suggestion. One of my Talmidim, all my Talmidim from Landers here for Shabbos, so one of them said, we had a very nice Shalosh Hodas with Rabbi Aryeh Cohen, who was Leibedik, Chassidus HaTorah. It was very, very beautiful. And one of my talmidim said afterwards, if every shalashudas was like that, kids wouldn't go off the derech. Shalashudas is what makes kids go off the derech. You have this declaration. Shalashudas is awful. You're not hungry. You have this nasty food. The tuna fish is bad usually. The challah rolls are stale. And it's just no one's in the mood for it. So you don't have to have like bad food for shalashudas, but we should have shalashudas. And if you want to have meat for shalashudas, if you're so inclined, so even if the Leil Tefillah's Masai Shabbos, one would be permitted to do that. Or any other Sudas Mitzvah. Purim Suda would be a Sudas Mitzvah, and therefore you'd be allowed to have meat even if the Leil Tefillah was the night of Shushan Purim. I'll just give one interesting shaila I had. I remember a couple of years ago, Hanukkah and Thanksgiving coincided. Right? Remember there was a Thanksgivica, I think they were calling it. So I was trying to think of, is there any good Thanksgivica shaila? And then I got one. A guy told me that his wife was going to the mikveh Thursday night of Thanksgiving, and the family was having a su'uda, earlier that day with turkey, kamuvan. What else would you have at the su'uda? So he wanted to know, can that count as a su'udas mitzvah because it's also Hanukkah? So there's a su'uda where it is a Hanukkah, it's the family Hanukkah party that they were doing, and they were just doing it, with turkey also, and with the whole Thanksgiving thing. So does that count as a su'udas mitzvah that she'd be allowed to eat the turkey at the Thanksgiving family party? I think it comes up again in another 3,000 years or something, so we'll discuss the shaila when it comes up again. You had a question?
I was under the impression that you're allowed to take a bath all
the day.
Oh, so
we're
if you did that,
so yeah, so between the bathing and the when I say the bathe, strictly speaking, yes, but let's qualify that. Strictly speaking, you cannot eat between the preparations and the mikveh, but the preparations are very often done over an elongated period of time. For example, if one does knows that it's, let's say, Leil Tefillah is Friday night. This is the most common example. So you're not going to have time right before Shabbos. Things are going to be crazy right before Shabbos. The last quiet half hour you're going to have is going to be in the morning between, 11 o'clock and 11:30 while the kids are at school. So you could do the bath at that point in time. So what? So that means that you're not allowed to eat the rest of the day. The preparations will continue later on with combing the hair and removing brushing teeth and other things. So I think as long as you haven't yet brushed your teeth and you're still going to brush and floss and everything else, that's considered that you're eating before the preparations were done. Even if you've done the bathing already, so you are allowed to eat other things, just not meat. This comes up in the following circumstance, now that Shabbos is getting later. Someone has a Leil Tefillah on Friday night. So as we know, we don't live so close to the mikveh, and it's annoying and difficult to walk alone at night to then somewhat scary. So sometimes a lot of women will just get a friend or the Rebbetzin to walk with them to the mikveh, and that's fine. The Rebbetzin's family is totally okay with that. If she's a few minutes late to the Friday night suit, that happens all the time. So, but some families came up with a great idea. Why don't they make an early Shabbos, and they'll have their Suda, early Shabbos, and then after the Suda, the husband will be able to walk the wife to Cedarhurst, and he'll walk around the block a few times or whatever, and that way he'll be able to walk her there and back on a summer Shabbos where the weather's not bad out, and why not do something like that? So some wanted to argue that you can't do that because then she's eating after the bath. But if she's still going to be cleaning, so first of all, it's a Sudas Mitzvah, but, between the bath and the Tevila, you're not really supposed to be eating. But if she's still going, if you have a rabbi who holds that you're allowed to brush your teeth on Shabbos, you can still brush after the meal, so then I would think that it would be permissible to do that, to have the meal, brush your teeth afterwards, and then to go to the mikveh, because that's considered that you didn't really finish up the preparations until that time. I didn't realize how late it was getting ready. Okay, let's try to quickly finish up. Basically, the chafifa and the chatzitza issues. The chafifa is the preparation of the body. Preparation of the body involves, on a d'oraisa level, looking over the body, making sure that there are no chatzitzas. Ezra was mesaken very early on. It was a takanas Ezra to also comb the hair and wash the body. And we and the Shach writes in Shulchan Aruch that we're supposed to try to spend a good deal of time in the preparation of the body to make sure that we're not rushed and that you don't miss anything. So the poskim point out that if you're going to do the chafifa during the daytime before you could go to the mikveh anyway, it should be no shorter than a half hour. If you're not going to be able to do the chafifa until nighttime, when there's really a concern that you might rush because the mikveh is already open, the chafifa should be no less than 1 hour. I would not recommend spending that entire hour in the bathtub because then you'll turn into a prune, but spend some of that's an hour for everything, for the brushing and the flossing and the bathing and the combing and everything else, just to dedicate 1 hour of time if it's all going to have to be done at night. The ideal time to do the chafifa, not always practical, but the ideal time is to start right before shkia and continue for about a half hour, and then you go straight to the mikveh, and the mikveh should be just about open at that time. It is also strongly recommended, for a number of reasons that we're not going to get into the details right now, strongly recommended that even if you bathed at home, which many women find more comfortable to do rather than to bathe in the mikveh, although hopefully soon with the new Grove Avenue mikveh, it will probably be more comfortable to bathe there because they'll probably have nicer baths than most of us have at home. But they'll have enough space, hopefully. So even if one bathes at home, it is recommended that one showers again, at least a quick shower before going to the mikveh at the mikveh. In fact, most Orthodox mikvahos in the world require that. For some reason, the Woodmere mikveh is an exception, does not require that. I don't know why, but I do know why. They just... too big of a crowd, because to the great shame of our community, we have not had adequate facilities for the number of Jews that live in the Five Towns area. But Baruch Hashem, that problem is about to be fixed. I don't think it opened yet, did it? But it's about to be fixed. But one should shower at the mikveh before going to the mikveh. After going to the mikveh is a very bad time to start looking for chatzitzos and for problems. The problems are supposed to be looked for before you go to the mikveh, not after you go to the mikveh. The famous story, Rabbi Razna told me about the rabbi who was getting shimush from Rav Mordechai Eliyahu and training and how to deal with shailas, and the rabbi was answering Rav Mordechai Eliyahu's phones, and a woman called up and said, I have a difficult shaila, I just went to the mikveh and I found something, I think it was a chatzitza. And the rabbi who answered the phone said, this sounds like a real shaila, let me ask Rav Eliyahu. So she asked the rabbi asked Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, and Rav Mordechai Eliyahu said, wait a second, is this Mrs. So-and-so? And he said a woman's name. And the rabbi said, I don't know. And he gets on the phone, is this Mrs. So-and-so? And she says, yes. So Mordechai Eliyahu says, Tagidla shezeh haya hatapuach. Tell her it was the apple. And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm going to tell her, what apple? So Tagidla. So he gets on the phone, he says, Slicha, giveret, harav amar shezeh haya hatapuach. Ah, toda. She hangs up the phone. So the rabbi says to Mordechai Eliyahu, what's the deal with the apple? He said, this woman has a habit of every time after she goes to the mikveh, she looks for a problem. And she invents a problem. She has what's called OCD, where she'll even whether the problem's there or not there, she'll find something. So he said, years ago I told her that she should bring to the mikveh with her an apple. And after she comes out of the mikveh, as soon as she gets dressed, she should eat the apple right afterwards. So that way, any problem she finds afterwards, I'm able to tell her, don't worry, that was the apple. That was from after the tefillah. That wasn't from before. It was a very wise etzah. Someone else told me that there are certain mikvahs that give out chewing gum.
Yeah, the mikveh Hillcrest, they have candies on your way out.
On your way out. So that, probably for that same reason. So that you always have, oh yeah, if I saw something in my teeth, it was probably from the candy or from the chewing gum. But one is supposed to do a serious job of trying to look for chatzitzas. It's just that it's supposed to be before the tefillah. The most common chatzitza issues or shailas are really dental issues, where there's temporary fillings, temporary fillings aren't really a problem, but temporary crowns, temporary stitches, things of that nature that are, or stitches that are non-dissolvable, that are no longer really necessary. It's just important to know what's going on in your mouth, so you could at least ask the dentist what's happening, and you can plan appropriately. It's not fun to have to make the call or to be on the receiving end of a call that comes from the mikveh on the Lel Tevilah. Uh-oh, I just realized I had dental work 2 days ago. Really? What happened? What did you have? I don't know. It used to be. I remember it happened a couple of times when Rabbi and Rebbetzin Top. where the assistant, when Rabbi Tap was the assistant rabbi of the Yungizwal Woodmere, so Dr. Tap, his wife, is a dentist. So she would always, she was our official person on call to run to the mikveh and see what was going on inside people's mouths to tell us whether it was a problem or not. Baruch Hashem, there are a lot of wonderful female dentists, but they would not, they don't probably want to go to the mikveh and go examine what's happening in people's mouths. So you could tell us, but I assume
but I
we have
patients that ask me all the time.
Good, okay. So
somebody once made me take off, only once somebody made me take off their temporary crown.
A temporary crown.
Her permanent was being placed the next day.
Right.
And she made me take off.
Okay. No, I hear that. It's not crazy because temporary crowns are really very. I don't know. Maybe just the way I've had them, they're very iffy. They're not like particularly strong.
Temporary
fillings are less of a problem. Yeah. Because temporary fillings are always going to be replaced by a real filling and need to be replaced by a real filling.
So
yeah, I've gone months and months and months without replacing a temporary crown. I know it's not right, but what's bothered me is all the poskim are makel with the dissolvable stitches, but every time I've had dental work, the dissolvable stitches don't really dissolve. You just spit them out for the whole week. So I don't know why that's okay, but all the poskim are makel, so I'm not going
to
cause trouble.
Yeah,
I have a lot of experience with dental. Right. So I have like $1 million mouth. But I have no idea why we're so makel about the dissolvable stitches. But okay, be that as it may. So we didn't quite get to everything. Everything we got to almost everything. So thank you very much for coming out on these frigid and inconvenient nights. And Bez Hashem will continue with other women's shiurim in the future, in the near future.